Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Training Tidbits podcast show. I'm your host, Ryan Cartledge from Animal Training Academy, and I'm extremely excited about having you here with us today and being back in your eardrums to talk all about best practice behavior management for what is set to be another amazing episode. I can't wait to dive in and learn all about today's guest and their learning odyssey. If you haven't checked the past episodes out yet, then make sure to head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and you can listen to them all there, or you can also find them on iTunes or on Stitcher. There is definitely something there for absolutely everyone, as well as some sensational up-and-coming episodes planned over the next wee while. Just before we do get started, I want to say a massive thank you to everyone that listens to this podcast on a regular basis, or maybe you are joining us for the first time ever. This show is so much fun to make, and I get inspired thinking about all the people that have benefited from all the wisdom our podcast guests have shared. Today's episode is, of course, going to be no exception to this. And if you do like the episode today, then please share it as far and as wide as you possibly can. Also, I appreciate that a lot of you listen to the podcast on apps from your mobile devices and smartphones. One thing you could do that would be really appreciated is navigate to the title of the podcast, and around there somewhere you should find three little dots. If you tap on this, it opens up a menu, and one of the options in that menu is to share. And you can easily put this on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever social media network you might use. I'd be extremely grateful if you could take a couple of seconds to do that. But we will get started on today's episode, where I'm going to be talking to Stephanie Edlund from Understanding Parrots in Sweden. Stephanie has spent most of her life learning about animal welfare, behavior, training, and enrichment. Growing up in Sweden, she has been surrounded by animals her whole life and has always been fascinated by birds especially. Since getting her first ones, two little rehomed parakeets named Blue and 16 when she was 8 years old, she hasn't lived a day without birds in her life. After getting her zookeeping degree, she studied biology at the University of Stockholm. The last 4 years, she has been working as a zookeeper and made a few stand-ins as a teacher while learning all that she can about force-free animal training and welfare. Today, she runs her own small business in Sweden, where she offers presentations and workshops for bird clubs, veterinarians, pet shops, and zoos. She also offers consultations and private training lessons, predominantly with parrots, but sometimes with other animals as well. Her Swedish website provides articles and online classes on enrichment, force-free animal training, and other useful topics for pet owners. She is the head trainer for Kopdarling, an educational zoo facility in Sweden, where she works with free-flighted parrots as well as other birds. Stephanie is a certified parrot behavior consultant, CPBC, with the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants, the IAABC, and is the chairperson of the Parrot Division since November 2016. She is also a professional member of IATA, the International Association of Avian Trainers and Educators. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome one Stephanie Edlund to the show today. Stephanie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and so great to have you here. We're going to dive straight into the first question today, Stephanie. Could you please take us all back to where you first started to learn about positive reinforcement animal training and some of the first animals that you ever trained using these techniques?
Yes. Okay. That's a while back. So I think I was about 12 years old and I had had my parakeets for a while, and I finally got a Senegal parrot. So I was super excited about that. And I hadn't heard about clicker training with dogs before. And when I was searching the web doing just general research about birds, I came across an article about trick training parrots. So I started reading up more on clicker training because it sounded like a lot of fun. And I joined some of the Yahoo groups that were popular back then and tried a few things with my Senegal. And I just remember feeling really amazed. I think the first thing I taught him was just like a simple wave or something on cue. And it just blew my mind that it actually worked. So, and after that, training pretty quickly turned into sort of an obsession for young me. So I spent a lot of time learning about it. And a few years later, I took on a really huge challenge by fostering a 20-something-year-old sulfur-crested cockatoo who had pretty much all the classical behavioral issues you can imagine. So he would scream all day long, engaged in feather destructive behavior. He would attack men, all kinds of things like that. So that's when I first started learning more about dealing with behavior problems. And I learned a lot from working with that bird. And I undoubtedly made a lot of mistakes. But once I started studying zookeeping at about 17, I had the chance to get some more hands-on experience training a lot of other species. Totally new ones to me, like meerkats and white-faced sockies. And one session that I remember very well is clicker training an African elephant calf, which was pretty much the coolest thing ever when you're a really new trainer. So there was pretty much no going back after that. And I also worked with the family dogs, of course. Yeah, and I was also very fortunate that one of our local exotics vets here invited Susan Friedman to Sweden during the last year of taking my degree. So I think I was maybe 19, 20 or something. And that was the first time I came across applied behavior analysis as a science as a whole through her LLA course. And that sort of completely changed me as a person and my outlook on animals and animal training. And that was also the first time I came in contact with Carolina Westend, actually, who's been a guest on your show previously. So after that, I've been lucky enough to be surrounded by some really smart and skilled women that have sort of enabled my journey into the field and been a really great support along the way. So, yeah.
I'm sure they would say the same about you.
Oh.
So great story. And any idea who that original article you read was by?
I have no idea, actually. It might have been one of Barbara's, Barbara Heidenreich, but I'm not sure. But she's been a very prominent figure in my journey as well. So I wouldn't be surprised. She's made a lot of great stuff, been a really huge inspiration. So
it's cool. And someone's going to hear you talk today, Stephanie, and go, oh, I'm going to give that a go and start their journey as well.
It's so cool.
Goes
full circle.
And I'm assuming that the early success you had of your Senegal when you got it to wave, and I think a lot of people listening to this podcast know that feeling you had.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I just communicated with this animal.
It's definitely. And it just opened up a whole new level of interacting with an animal. I think that was the coolest part for me it's just unlike any other experience up until that point. And I think that's the coolest thing about training, that excitement that I felt then is exactly the same feeling as I have today when I'm working with a new animal. And just like, yeah, it still works. It's still just as amazing. So fascination is always there.
And it's really cool. Sometimes the greatest teachers, and tell me what you think, maybe you see things differently, are the more challenging situations.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because I think that's the ones where you learn to trust yourself and trust the process. And yeah, because I always start out with a feeling of like, oh gosh, what have I gotten myself into? This won't work. But then I sit down, make a plan, follow it, and it works because science. So yeah.
Because science. I love it.
It's true.
It's just so well said. I think we're going to name this podcast Because Science.
Go for it. That's awesome.
Have you got any specific stories or situations that stick out from training that sulfur-crested cockatoo?
Good question. It was such a long time ago, but I think that was back when I first started learning about not just training tricks, but also working with behavior in other contexts. So, and he screamed a lot, and I was actually living in an apartment at that time. So it was very cool to see how just some simple like antecedent arrangements and working a lot with like DRIs, so reinforcing other incompatible behaviors and things like that, really got the frequency of that screaming down very fast. And still stayed friends with my neighbors.
Just one quick tip for those listening who might have a screaming parrot at home and unhappy neighbors or partners.
Mm-hmm.
What can you say is one small thing they can potentially start to think about or implement that might start to move them in a more desirable direction?
Well, of course, it always depends on the context in which the parrot is screaming, first of all. I mean, oftentimes it will be because of, getting attention. And if that's so, then just start reinforcing the behaviors that you do want to see with more attention. So if they talk or use their inside voice, whatever you want to call it, then reinforce that with attention and all the things. But it also depends. I mean, some parrots will scream because they want you to get away from them. And then that, of course, just won't work. It will have the opposite effect. So first of all, try to just pinpoint the situations in which it's happening and work from there, I would say. And also enrichment. I mean, making sure that they have all their basic needs met is, of course, the first step. So a lot of foraging enrichment, making sure they have things to occupy them, preferably having two birds. I'm always an advocate of that when it's possible to meet their social needs in other ways than you being present all the time. So yeah, that would be the first tips.
So wonderful. And I love hearing about people's behavioral odysseys, as I like to call them. So thank you very much for those tidbits and for sharing about your story. For the next question, I wanted to talk about something that you have been very busy, I imagine, creating, and that is the online library of parrot behavior. Can you please explain for everyone listening what this is, how it got started, and where people can find out more information about this exciting resource?
Yeah, definitely. So this is turning into quite a project. My sort of grand vision is a free online resource where people, no matter if you're a pet parrot owner or a bird trainer or an animal keeping student or anyone, can go to learn about parrot behavior and parrot body language in particular. And it was one of those ideas that sort of slowly grew in the back of my mind for a long time. So when I do consulting work, obviously I often spend a great deal of time with my clients talking about body language and teaching them how to interpret what their parrot is doing and what the proper response would be from them and so on. And then at the beginning of last year, I started doing what you're doing and experimenting with online courses a lot. So about animal training or parrot training in particular and other topics relating to animal welfare. So, and it was somewhere there that these two things sort of melted together. And I realized that an online course on parrot body language would be pretty awesome and also save a lot of time, especially with new clients. If I could just point them to a resource where they could keep practicing outside of our consulting sessions, then we could use that time for other things. So, yeah. But the more I looked at it and tried to come up with sort of a framework for the course, I realized that, yeah, this can and should probably be much more than just a course because it's a really big topic. And since it's so important to be able to interpret body language, I really wanted to make it a free resource too, not just for my clients, that anyone could access, as I think it could save a lot of people and a lot of birds from a lot of headache, if only this was more easily accessible. So I actually did a crowdfunding campaign and raised some money to get the project going. And I was also fortunate enough to receive support, both financial and some motivational support, both from the IABC and the IAATE as well. So that's pretty fun. And it is a pretty big project. As you know, interpreting body language can be pretty complex. Like, there's a lot of factors to take into consideration, which is what makes it very challenging and also very fun to work with. And since I'm such a learning nerd, I also want to focus a lot on the best way to teach it, because it is a skill to someone that hasn't done any previous work with parrots or don't have any previous experience with that topic. So for example, if you're completely new to parrots, I mean, first of all, you have to learn what to even look at. So which body parts should you pay attention to and what should you look for? And once you've learned that, you need to also practice doing it. So just looking at birds doing things and describing or operationalizing what they're doing, not trying to interpret it necessarily, but just being able to describe it. Then, once you know how to do that, we need to start to incorporate some ABA thinking into the picture and look at circumstances. So the challenging thing about parrot body language is that body language that looks very similar can have drastically different meaning and different outcomes if you're interacting with that bird in different contexts. So, I mean, take a thing like eye pinning, which for those of you who might not be familiar with parrots, is when the pupil sort of contracts and appears very small. And if we see eye pinning, that's generally an indicator of some kind of excitement, but it can mean different things depending on what other things the parrot is doing currently. So the posture, what feathers are raised and where on the body, what is the bird doing with its beak, is it vocalizing, and things like that. And being able to see that difference might be what determines if you have a successful training session and a happy bird, or if you get a really nasty bite. So we can't just say that eye pinning means X, because it will always depend on what else is going on. And we also need to look at what circumstances tend to encourage what body language, how we influence body language with our own behavior when we interact with a bird. And I also want people to think about how, why, and even if we can actually draw the conclusions that we're making. So if I'm looking at a bird and I say that what it's doing right now means that it's calm, it's angry, it's scared, how do I actually know that? And what do those labels even mean in the first place? So there's a lot of layers to it, obviously. And I'm currently just working on the basics, like gathering all the material, because I want it to be a lot of video, a lot of photos, so people can see the things happening, not just have them described. And just trying to make a general outline for how to present all the material in the best way, making a framework for that and setting up a platform for it. So, and as soon as more info is available, I will, of course, be posting about it at Understanding Parrots and through my newsletter and social media and things like that. So as soon as I have more, I will put it out there so people can start looking at it. I'm really excited about it, though. I think it could be good.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure that we get that stuff on the Animal Training Academy Facebook pages as well as it comes out so people can stay updated. And
yeah, awesome.
Your description there, you talked a lot about ABA, which I know has had a big influence on you over the last wee while, and operationalizing behavior and talking about context. I was going to say free resource. And by the way, thank you for making it free for everyone out there listening, and that's going to benefit from this in the future. That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously focusing on parrots.
Yeah.
How much does ufology build upon the ABA that you're implementing in here? And because you're talking a lot about ABA, is it a resource that people working with other animals can also benefit from, do you think? Or is it more specifically just fine-tuned for parrots?
I definitely think so, at least as far as the general outlines go. I mean, obviously, if you want to learn how to read dog body language, you might not want to look at parrots all day, but I mean, the general principles still apply. What is the animal doing? You have to learn to know what we're looking at, describe what we're seeing, and then putting it into the proper context. So that's the same no matter what animal you're working with. And of course, a lot of body language is pretty similar across species as well. Things like stiff postures and things like that can often have very similar meanings. But I think one of the reasons I wanted to make it specific for parrots and not just reading body language in general is because I don't know why, but I think a lot of people have an especially hard time reading birds. And that goes for even some very dear colleagues of mine that are really great, like ethologists, work with mammals all their lives. And then they freak out when they're interacting with a bird because they don't know what's going on. So because birds, I mean, they're obviously different. They're not mammals. So, and if you're not used to them, it can be pretty tricky. It's not supposed to replace interacting with birds, but it's a way to be better prepared as well if you're new to them. If you plan on getting a pet bird, for example, having some knowledge about this will definitely give you a head start as opposed to having to figure everything out on the go.
Great information. And I know there's loads of people who listen to the show for whom this is going to be highly beneficial. So thank you so much for sharing that. I was wondering if we could potentially even build on this even further. And you identified that you would like to discuss this in depth. So that topic is interpreting animal behavior while we're training. We talked about it just then, but can we go over this in even more detail, Stephanie? Can you give us some more information on this topic?
Mm-hmm. Sure thing. I think Carolina Westlin mentioned during your podcast with her that understanding animal emotions is super important. And I think body language is one of the most important, like, practical aspects of understanding emotions. So that's sort of the gap between what we can see and what we can't see that's going on inside an animal. And I think also it was Barbara Heidenreich that said that being able to accurately interpret body language is what separates good trainers from really great trainers. And I definitely agree with her there. It's often something that will make or break a training session or sometimes even a human-animal relationship as a whole, as what I often see with my behavior clients. Often what's gone wrong there is that, the communication is lacking because the owner can't really interpret what the bird is trying to communicate. And I honestly also think it's sort of the foundation that training rests upon as well. Might have great mechanical skills, but that still won't get you all the way there if you can't correctly interpret that an animal isn't feeling comfortable with what's going on, for example. So it's such an important practical application skill. And again, it really ties into the importance of animal emotions and giving the animal control during training. If we don't understand what the animal is trying to communicate, then how can we possibly respond in a way that grants them more control? Of course, I also think it's super important as far as safety goes, both for you and the animal. It can definitely be the difference between being safe and you or the animal getting injured if you misinterpret what's going on. And I'm honestly a really big coward. I think that's one of the reasons I've become good at interpreting body language, because I don't want to get hurt. And I work with very aggressive birds most of the time. So I guess, like, being a coward has its benefits both for me and the animals in that respect.
So apart from becoming a coward, What else can we do? Potentially, there is the scope for some people to get confused when thinking about this stuff, because we've got to consider the emotional state of our animals. And at the same time, we've got to not consider it and operationalize all the behavior they're doing. Can you give some input as to how we can kind of glue this all together? Does that make sense?
I think so. And I think what we have to do is just, first of all, practice observing our animals more. I don't think many people, at least not pet owners, do that enough. And then try to, again, with our ABA glasses, I mean, look at what is going on. What's happening before? What is the animal doing? And what happens after? And that will often tell us a lot that we need to know. So if an animal is, let's say you're presenting your hand and the bird is leaning away and you keep like offering your hand and the bird flies away, then you can probably draw the conclusion that leaning away means, yeah, I don't really like this. I think just observing and seeing what happens in what context is the best sort of way to bridge the gap there.
Such a great discussion. And once again, I know so many people will be taking notes and receiving many great takeaways from you there. So thank you very much for that. I'm really excited to hear your answer to the next question, because this is my turn to really sharpen my pencil and get ready to make some notes. This is a topic that I'm very interested in, as are all the listeners of this podcast. Stephanie, could you please tell everyone listening your thoughts about what is the best way to teach others about animal behavior and training?
Yeah, this is such an interesting topic, and I'm sure I have a lot to learn from you here as well. The thing is that knowing something, even though you know it really well, it doesn't mean that you're good at teaching it, which I've learned the hard way. I've had some really bad teaching experiences in my past, but I've been thinking about this a lot, especially since I started working on teaching online and with pre-recorded material. And I think you can probably relate to that. The first thing that struck me was that you can get away with being a lot less concise when you're teaching in real life. And it was really eye-opening and pretty frustrating at times when I worked on the first online course that I made, since I really had to distill what I talked about and sort of make every word count for people to ask questions if they didn't get it right away. And it was up to me to just like eliminate the possibility of misinterpreting what I was saying. I started out with a course topic that I thought would be super simple, just teaching a recall. And I ended up spending so much time on that course. It was ridiculous. I hated it by the time I was done with it, but I learned a lot in the process. So it was definitely worth it. Yeah, it's so tricky to, first of all, like divide the topic that you're trying to teach into small enough steps that you can communicate them effectively. Because I often feel frustrated that I can't throw like this huge chunk of info at someone in one go. I really need to like divide it into smaller approximations. And it can be tricky. And we also need to think a lot about which order we present material in. So I spend a lot of time just thinking about that. Yeah, I want to say this, but in order for them to understand this, I first need to explain this. And then I first need to say this. But yeah, so it can be really tricky. It is a lot more difficult than one might think, I think, at least. It doesn't come as naturally to me as it does to many other people. But yeah, I think also that's one of the reasons I really like teaching on the internet, because it's really forced me to think a lot more about the subjects that I think I know very well, like teaching a recall. I had to really dive into the topic, and it was a much bigger challenge than I expected. But the more time I spend doing it, the more I really love the internet as a platform for learning. Because, I mean, personally, I've always been one of those people that I'm very scared of getting answers wrong. And sometimes I get so caught up in other people that I forget to actually listen to what they're saying and things like that. So I think being able to listen to and think about the material in your own time and then discussing it and asking questions afterwards when you've had the time to process it on your own really takes the pressure off for some people, and it makes it easier to just learn. I don't think online learning will ever be something that will replace getting hands-on education, of course, but it's definitely an excellent complement to hands-on work. And especially when it comes to learning observational skills, like with body language, for example. Just being able to rewind and watch something again or doing it in slow-mo is so valuable. if I'm teaching a class in real life and a bird does something, half the people there will have missed it, and that's that. So it's really a benefit in that regard.
So let's flip this on its head. And for those listening who want to learn online, what advice might you give them?
Who want to learn online?
Yeah. So I have my pet parrot at home and I'm seeking out new information, obviously I'm going to go to your website and learn there. But what kind of advice can you give me? Because if I'm completely novice and suddenly, for whatever reason, I've find myself a parrot in my house, I've gone out and bought one because I thought it would be a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I Google training a parrot. I mean, I'm going to be sport for choice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. And that's really such a tricky thing because there's so much information out there that I don't really know if you can call it information even. But yeah, there's some really high quality things from some really great trainers. And then there's a lot of less good things out there. So it's really difficult to sift out the good stuff when you don't know what you're looking for, because you can never know what you don't know. That's the tricky part. So of course, I would advise people to, first of all, look at the organizations like the IABC or the IAATE as well, because they have a lot of great resources often on their websites. Because I mean, anyone can act like a professional, which is very evident when it comes to parrot training. I think there are a lot of very popular people on YouTube that don't really know what they're doing, to be honest. And sure, they can trick train, but when it comes to other things, might not be the best advice out there.
So can you potentially just take this opportunity to maybe provide some more information about these organizations that you're involved with?
Sure thing. So the IAABC is the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. And they have divisions for parrots, they have horse, cat, and also dog. It is an organization for professional behavior consultants, obviously. So if you need help with a companion parrot or a dog or cat or horse, you can go there and look up consultant in your area and get some one-on-one help. And they also have a lot of really great online courses and also a yearly conference that you can attend. Really great professional courses and some material for regular pet owners who just might be interested in training or behavior as well. So a really great resource. And you can also become an affiliate member, so you don't have to be a consultant to join. You get access to a lot of really cool material by doing that.
And what's the website for that?
Oh, it's IAABC.com. The IATE is the International Association of Avian Trainers and Educators. It's an organization for professional bird trainers, basically, and people that work with birds in education programs or things like that. So, yeah, and they have a companion parrot section too. So a lot of great resources for the companion parrot owners out there and some really, really good trainers. It is IAATE.org.
Fantastic, and great that we had an opportunity to talk about this today. Sadly now, though, we are nearly at the end, but that's okay because we're also heading into one of my favorite parts of the podcast, and this is story time. Stephanie, can you please share with everyone listening two or three stories from your experience training animals so far and some of the important lessons you've learned along the way?
So I think one of the stories that first come to mind is, it sort of touches a bit on what we talked on in the beginning there with trusting the process. It was sort of my first training project when I worked at the zoo. So I worked with a group of 12 lorikeets, rainbow lorikeets, and they lived in this huge, heavily planted outdoor aviary, like 4 or 5 meters high or something. And of course, at the start of the day, I had to count these birds, which was easier said than done most days. So after spending like half an hour just trying to find the birds in there, one day I decided that, hey, it would be pretty cool if I could just recall train these birds so that we could have this done in 5 minutes instead of 35. And yeah, but then I quickly sort of hit that wall with, oh my gosh, this is going to be super difficult. How am I going to do this? But then I just sat down, made a training plan, stuck to it, trusted the process. And it was really quick too. It really struck me by surprise how quickly they learned. But in like 2 weeks or something, I had a recall with 12 birds coming down to a station when I called them over. So that was really cool. And it was my first time working with that many birds. I think the maximum was like 3 at a time before. So that was super cool. One story that stick out from pretty recently is a video I made and posted on my Facebook page. So it's a video where I'm doing some husbandry training with one of my own parrots, my Timna African Grey called Echo. And that video went viral pretty much very fast, very quickly. And it was pretty funny to me because it really wasn't anything special in my eyes. It was pretty basic behaviors that people really seem to think were very cool. And I mean, it is. I love husbandry training. It's one of my favorite topics. But yeah, it just sort of made it clear to me how far we can get with just some basic behaviors. All I did in that video was some targeting that had some added duration, had been proofed very well and things like that. And so we can get very far with just the basics. That whole story made me think a lot more about that. So
cool. And I really like your, I'm going to quote you on this, your quote, trust the process.
Yeah, I think it's actually Susan Friedman who said that first. I'm not sure, but I think so. But I really like it too, because that's what you have to do. I mean, if you know the science and if you know what to do, then don't get deterred. just stick to it and do what you know works. Like I said, because science. I just thought of another story too. Speaking of trusting the process and trusting your own judgment, is a ram that I worked with a few years ago too. So we had a lot of issues with this ram who wouldn't stop bugging us when we went into the enclosure. This was a huge ram, huge horns, potentially dangerous animals. So we of course wanted to sort of stop that. And he had a habit of coming up to the fence and just like, yeah, ramming it with his horns and just wanting to get out of there and being in the way when we tried to get in with the wheelbarrow and things like that. And the general consensus was that, yeah, he needs to be ignored, shouldn't pay any attention to him. But of course that wasn't working. So I decided to just train him instead. And people were very hesitant because that would just turn him into a treat-begging monster and he would follow us around all the time and it would become dangerous. And yeah, and so yeah, but I thought it would work, and so I gave it a shot, and it did work. I pretty quickly had a ram that as soon as I approached the gate, he would go to his station, which was like halfway into the enclosure, stay there and just stand there and be like super friendly while I cleaned the enclosure, and then leave me alone when I left, and then come up to the gate, get a treat, and that was that. So if I listened to other people and not stuck to my guns, then I would probably still be having that problem.
Can we build on that a little bit? Because that is a common thread, I think, for mm-hmm. some people who find themselves in a situation where they might be listening to this podcast or be digesting other content online and then looking at the situations that they find themselves in and going, maybe I could do that there. But if they're not surrounded by that supportive network, can you give any mm-hmm. advice to these people about mindset or things they can do?
Well, first of all, I would get access to that supportive network, because it's out there. I mean, as you know, there's a lot of communities on the internet, trainers that you can talk to. I mean, please message me if you're in that situation. I'd love to offer some advice, and I'm sure other people will as well. So try to talk to other people, because I think many trainers have been in that situation, especially now that we're in sort of a shift in how things are done. And I mean, I'm not saying that everyone should go work with dangerous animals, so potentially dangerous animals, and just doing things if you don't know what you're doing, because it can obviously go wrong too. But talk to people, and there's support out there, and there's advice out there too. So
ask for help.
Ask for help, definitely. Because one of my favorite things about the animal training community is that everyone is so friendly and sharing, and really, because we all want the same thing and we want each other to succeed, because if other people succeed, then I've succeeded as well. We have the same goal. So, yeah.
So, guys, if you have a treat begging monster, reach out and trust the process. Was that well articulated?
Yeah.
And that ram that you just mentioned, am I correct in assuming that you sent me a picture of this animal to include in the write-up?
That's not him, actually. That's one of the goats. But I can send you a picture of him. I have video of that training, too. Oh, so when he's like banging on the fence and being a general pain in the butt.
You could provide video that for everyone to get. That would be awesome. And I really like that picture of the goat in you, by the way. Aww. I was going to use that for the write-up.
That's awesome. Yeah, I do love my goats.
And one more thing, just before we move on, you talked about your video of your African greys at home and the husbandry training that you were doing.
Yeah.
And the end goal of that is decrease stress when we have to do medical related things with them. One thing you said though was that it surprised you a little bit because it was just simple targeting.
Yeah. And I mean, simple might have been the wrong choice of word, but I mean, I really delved into this a lot lately. I'm working on a course on the same topic as well, because most of what we're doing is very basic things. So I mean, or you can reduce most of what we're doing to very basic components. Something that looks very flashy, say a parrot painting, for example, which is another one of my videos that really hit off. It looks flashy, it looks like it's really difficult, but what it is basically just target training with some movement. So if we try to like divide or reduce what we're doing into those basic components and just get really, really good at the basics, then we can get really far. And I think that's one of the issues a lot of people have is that too little time doing the basics. But that's really where all the foundations are laid down. And that's where most people should spend their time. I mean, if you know how to target train, if you know how to add duration, and if you know how to add distractions or proof of behavior, then you can teach so many things really well.
So great and wonderful stories and lessons. As mentioned, sadly though, that does bring us now to our final question. Could you please now, Stephanie, take us all into the future and share with us what you would like to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years in the animal training world?
I'd actually like to see it keep doing what it's doing and just keep expanding, because as far as I see it, things are really going in the right direction right now. There's so many individuals such as yourself doing really awesome work. And I mean, yeah, even though I think positive reinforcement trainers could sometimes stand to show a bit more humility in some contexts, in the grand scheme of things, I think we've come really far in the last decade, to be honest. I think we should give ourselves a huge pat on the back for that. And one thing I would really like to see, though, and that I think is happening more and more, is getting good animal training info more accessible, both like financially, but in other ways as well. By doing things like what you're doing and what I'm trying to do, which is why I think that working with online courses is such a neat thing, because it's really opening up a lot of new doors in that area. But yeah, generally, I think we as a community are really, really on the right path. And I can't wait to see the progress we'll make in the up and coming years, because there's, like I said, so many cool people doing so many cool things. And yeah, I feel very optimistic, I have to say, for once. Yeah, no, I really think that we're on the right path. It feels like it. I've only been in the field for not that long, like 10 years or something, that I've started to engage in the community, so to speak. Of course, there's ups and downs, but in general, I think we're doing great and heading in the right direction.
Awesome. So for all you wonderful people listening to this podcast, just continue.
Yeah.
But before we wrap up, Steph, could you just direct people to where they can go to find out more about you and what you do, where they can find you?
Sure thing. First of all, I'd love for you to visit understandingparrots.com, which is my website. For those of you who might be listening from Sweden, I also have a Swedish website that focuses not just on parrots, but all kinds of animals, called djursmart.se. Very Swedish. So yeah, and of course, please follow Understanding Parrots on Facebook. That would be nice too. I post a lot of small tidbits there and share films and all kinds of things. Yeah, that's about it. Oh, and I also have a newsletter that you're more than welcome to sign up for.
Very cool. And we'll link to all of these websites / Facebook pages on the podcast write-up. And I'm not sure if you're aware of this, Stephanie, but you can additionally use, this is what I use anyway, Google Chrome, and you can add an extension to that translates people's websites. So you can even potentially view your Swedish website in English.
True, true. Yeah. Good tip. I haven't thought about that, but yeah, that's an option.
So from myself and from everyone listening, Stephanie, Parrot Flocks Full of Animal Training Academy, gratitude to you today for making time to come on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
The pleasure is all ours. We do, of course, additionally really appreciate all of you guys tuning in today as well. And I want to ask a small favor of those listening. If you do enjoy these podcasts, and as a practitioner of best practice behavior management yourself, you feel that the information held within could help others, then please share this episode wherever you can, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Pinterest, Snapchat, whatever you use, so that as a community, we can do absolutely everything within our power to disseminate this information as far and as wide as possible. And one really easy way to do this, if you're listening to it from a podcast app on your mobile device or smartphone, is that there should be 3 little dots next to the title of the episode. This might change slightly between devices and depending upon what app you're using, but if you click on this, there'll be an option to share the episode, and then you can choose Facebook or email or however you want to share it, and it's done. Really simple. It'll take you 30 seconds. If you could do that, that would be super. That's it for this episode though. We'll wrap it up there, and thanks again so much for listening. Chop chop lollipop, and you'll hear from us again soon.